Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 336 of Geeked Out Radio. I am back this week with a new intro for...
To Infinity and Beyond!
Matt, how are you doing?
I'm good, David. How are you? Thanks for including my new intro.
You're very welcome. I know you're a huge Toy Story fan, so, you know, that's a good, appropriate new intro for you.
I've got a couple of minifigures right in front of me.
Very cool. So, what have you been up to the last couple of weeks?
Well, I thought I'd try some different streaming services because I've been on Apple for so long. Not that that's a problem, but we just have so many to keep track of. And it is kind of becoming a good problem where you forget to check the other ones.
Yes.
And see what's on there. So, I was looking around on Amazon and was reminded about Upload. Of course, Amazon tried to get me to watch season 2 first because that's what they do.
They
show you random seasons of their shows. But I watched it, started it, and of course it's got Robbie Amell, so not Arrow. It was also in Flash and the Arrow shows as well. Him as the lead, he sort of like almost dies, gets uploaded, and it becomes kind of as soon as he starts walking around in this world, I thought of like The Good Place. Obviously, because it's got similarities to it, but a different sort of plot and a different sort of way of getting there. You haven't got the sort of morality system going on and the good and the bad place. It's simply sort of this futuristic tech scenario where like you're about to die, because I've seen the first three episodes, if you actually die then you can't be uploaded is what I understand. That changes later.
It's basically if you're about to die you have the option of having your consciousness digitally uploaded to this digital afterlife. That's the premise of it.
But I watched three episodes. I thought it was really fun, really really good. It was great balance between like there's clearly something dodgy going on somewhere with his car crash and stuff, but no, a lot of really great fun stuff. I thought Robbie Amell was really good in the role. I've admittedly not seen him in too many things. I've seen him in obviously the Arrowverse I mentioned, where he was great in that. I think he was in like the first season of The Flash and stuff, but there's not too many things I can remember seeing him in. And as I was kind of obviously, you know, looking at him because he's on the screen, I sort of thought like he could one day fit some sort of Robin Nightwing type of role.
And
hey, Warner Brothers, you have Michael Keaton coming back. You could use him as a Batman Beyond and then use Robbie Amell for Terry McGinnis. But, you know, that's kind of some of the things I was thinking of.
Because
you've still got room in like DCEU and that sort of thing to use other versions. But thought it was really good. It's interesting. The first episode was almost like double the length of the others, but all the other episodes are about half an hour. The one kind of sticking point, or not kind of an annoying thing, just an observation. And I don't think I'm supposed to like this character, but I'm not really getting on with his girlfriend character.
Supposed to like the girlfriend at all. She's a horribly vapid, obnoxious, materialistic girlfriend.
It's kind of funny and stuff when she pops up on screen and trying to see the main character try to navigate that relationship, especially in, you know, literally life and death and stuff. And he has his funeral, and I thought that was quite interestingly well done. The one thing I didn't quite understand, and I feel like I missed the point, why couldn't he buy anything at the start?
Because the account that he is uploaded to is her account, not his. So she's sort of in control of his digital afterlife. Therefore, unless she puts money into that account to allow him to buy stuff, or his name's not on it, then he can't do anything or buy anything without permission from her and without access from her. So that was the sort of basis of it. So she's in basically full control of his life at that point.
Which he definitely loves. It's one of them relationships you kind of think like you two shouldn't really have been together.
Of course.
But that's part of the fun, I suppose, which is which is good. But no, I had a really good time. I'm definitely going to continue watching it when I've got some time and stuff. Not that the episodes take that long, but I really, really enjoyed it. So you've seen both seasons of this, haven't you?
Yeah, I really, really like it. As I said before, I think it's really interesting that you ended up with two shows about the afterlife from two guys that have worked very closely together, because it's Mike Saw that did The Good Place and Greg Daniels that did Upload, and both of them worked on Parks and Rec together. So it's weird that they both ended up doing shows about sort of different versions of the afterlife as one of their next projects. But it's really enjoyable, that show. It's an interesting take on it. It hasn't got the heart and soul that The Good Place has.
It's not quite aiming for that in the same way.
No, it's much more a sort of straight up comedy driven thing. But I love the first season. I think it's really fun. The second season changes tack a little bit because it becomes a bit more about the, you know, as you said, you could tell there's something shady going on. It comes a bit more about that in the second season, because the first season is very much about him figuring out this new life and this new world. And the second season, he's got a lot of that organized and understands how it works. So the second season goes a bit more into the sort of conspiracy stuff. But a really, really enjoyable show. I'm not sure whether it's been renewed for a third season yet, but I'm hopeful it comes back for another one because it's really...
Has the whole second season gone out?
Yes, whole second season is out now as well.
Okay. Yeah, really enjoyed it. Over on a bit of a darker side, I tried the first episode of Top Boy. This is actually the 2011 version. I was speaking to a friend on Twitter, was saying that he'd finished the second season of the new version of Top Boy, which is the Netflix one. He said it was really good, and a lot of the things he talked about, I was like, oh, I kind of want to watch that. I sort of remember Top Boy when I was back in like high school and college and stuff. Seen screenshots and clips and stuff of the second season, I was like, oh, this looks like quite high production value. And then I watched the 2011 show and I was like, yeah, this has kind of got the 2011 production value behind it. You can kind of tell this show's over 10 years old, which does knock the quality a little bit. But essentially what Top Boy is about is the London council estate kind of life, where there's, you know, knife crime and drug dealings and that sort of stuff, which unfortunately is still relevant today. You know, those things still happen today, which is a big problem in London. But it's quite a rough sort of show, and there's some things going on with like the main character's mum and everything. Although it depends on who you think the main character is, because there's one that you kind of follow that's a younger guy, and he's sort of just trying to navigate his way through like school with his friend and stuff, and something happens to his mum. And then there's sort of the main character of like the gang side of things, and they do cross over and stuff, and they do meet and have conversations. But it was quite good. I'll definitely continue watching more of it, and I do want to watch both of, because there's two seasons of the old version and two seasons of the new version. Yeah. I'm told that they've got like bits of continuity and stuff, so I do want to go through both of them. And given that the shows are both sort of British, they're quite short and everything, so I enjoyed that. It's because even when the show came out back when I was at high school and college and stuff, I didn't watch much of it then. I remember knowing some friends at the time, and they were like, oh, this show's really, really good and stuff, so I'm finally sort of getting around to that.
Yeah.
Have you seen any of Top Boy at all?
I haven't. I have been told it is a very good show. The first two seasons were made by Channel 4, then the second two seasons went on to Netflix. I think Ashley Walters, Deshane, and Kane Robertson's Gerald are the only two characters that are across all four seasons. There is obviously fairly major cast changes when season 3 or the first Netflix season came around. But some of the characters do cross over as well from those first two to the second two seasons.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So I'll continue watching that. And the other show I continued with, I meant to watch the second episode last time I came on, but I watched the second episode of Foundation. I'm taking my time with the show, but this isn't a show that you want to binge watch like three episodes in a row of.
No.
So there's a lot to take in, but it's really, really good. I thought the second episode continued on the first episode, and it was really good. A lot of really big kind of things happening in that second episode. I was very prepared for, like, because I remember last time I came on here and spoke about the pilot, and you said about how it sort of shifts around in time and stuff, and you start noticing that a lot in this episode. So I was like, wait a minute, this is taking place here, and I kind of tried to grasp when things were sort of taking place and that, because I've said before about like how important it is to structure your show properly and have scenes stitched together that make sense and have an actual flow to them, and scenes that don't end too early and jump around and cut and stuff. The show does do some of that, but it manages to surprisingly get away with a lot of it, because it depends on the amount of attention you're paying, which is obviously something you said to me before.
Yes.
But I'm sort of like very, very focused with it, and like within a few seconds maybe of a character talking in a new scene, I was like, okay, this takes place here roughly. And obviously I'm not supposed to know everything that's going on because I'm supposed to be told the story. But no, like great sci-fi stuff. There's a bit more of like some action things going on in episode two, which is good. It's really, really well written as well. I was noticing a lot of the quality of the dialogue and stuff. And obviously that goes along with the really good acting and characters. You know, it's kind of difficult when you're trying to get your characters to explain something a bit more complicated, especially in like a futuristic show like this, that can be a bit more difficult. But no, the writing is really quite smart in a lot of places. And it's mainly the young version of the lead character in the second episode. She's really good at that role and stuff. So do you remember anything about the second episode?
Yeah, there is a little bit of confusion about who that girl is in the second episode, because she's not who you think she is. So it's kind of interesting how that has all been stitched together. And I mean, as you say, it is one of those things that I did say to you beforehand, you really, really have to focus on it, because they do an excellent job of stitching it together in such a way that you're never entirely sure exactly what's going on, but it jumps backwards and forwards in time. And particularly when you've got on the sort of flip side of things, when you're dealing with the three brothers, they're sort of three emperors that run
they're really interesting.
The galaxy. Yeah, there's three emperors that run the galaxy, and they're all clones, but they're cloned at slightly different ages. So it's played by three actors, but they are different versions of them, because you meet them, they're always cloned at around about the same age. So you have one that's sort of much younger, then you have one that's kind of middle-aged, and one that's older. So at various points when you meet them, the one that was the middle brother is suddenly now the older brother. And yeah, so that is a little confusing to kind of wrap your head around if you're not quite understanding exactly where it is in the timeline, because it's very difficult to tell sometimes. But that's intentional, and it's written in that way. So it could be a very confusing show. It's not something that you can sit and play on your phone while you're watching. It's something really have to focus on.
If you do that, you'll miss like half a scene.
Yeah, and then something won't make sense like 10 minutes later. It's brilliantly written. It really is a masterclass in kind of tying a story together. It's like holding it together very, very carefully and still making it work. I do think it's a superbly written show.
But yeah, no, I'm really happy that I'm really enjoying it, and I'm not finding myself really lost on anything. I mean, I have a few questions about what's going on in some parts of the story, but obviously I'm supposed to wonder what those
intentional.
Are. So, but I've not found myself like lost as to what's going on, which is good. I mean, I like stuck my phone on charge and left it on the side yesterday. So I remember when you were in the process of watching the first season, you know, when you said that some parts of it were thought to be unfilmable, is there any like specifics with that?
No, I think it's just the book as a whole. A lot of people had looked at the book and said, you can't film this because of the fact that it jumps around so much and it's like various points in time. And so I don't think there was anything particularly specific, but a lot of people that were fans of the book had said, well, you just couldn't make this into a TV show because they said that about Watchmen as well, and they managed to make a sort of pretty decent film version of it, and also then the masterclass of a TV series, which I mean didn't directly relate to the book, but you know, so in skilled hands it is possible to do that sort of thing. And I haven't read the Foundation, the original Isaac Asimov novel, so I don't know how close that is, but certainly I think they've done a wonderful job with the TV show.
Yeah, no, I've enjoyed it a lot so far. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. Anyway, that's what I've been up to. How about yourself, David?
Still playing through Expeditions Rome, which has been quite interesting. I've sort of finished the first act bit of it. It's quite nice because there's a lot of sort of, I mean, Expeditions Rome, you're basically taking over a Roman legion and fighting your way through parts of sort of Asia in the initial campaign, but it's an RPG, so there are RPG elements to it as well. And then when you finish that initial campaign, they send you back to Rome, and that's all real story stuff of you dealing with your family and, you know, life around Rome and that sort of thing. So I've really, really been enjoying that. And then the next bit, they send you to Africa, which is sort of the next part of the combat-y type things. So it's a really interesting balance of sort of RPG combat, turn-based combat stuff it is. And it's got a really good story running running through it as well. Going to be a while before I get to the end of that. I think it's quite a large RPG from what I could tell, but I don't know how many hours in I am at the moment. 45 hours in, apparently, I am at the moment. I'm very much enjoying that. It's been really, really good so far. So continue and play through that. On the TV side of things, only really one new show I've watched this week, which a friend of mine recommended to me, and it's called Pieces of Her. It's a Netflix series, and it's based on a book. It's sort of difficult to talk about without giving too much away, but it stars Toni Collette in the lead role and Bella Heathcote, arguably Bella Heathcote is actually the lead role. It's a mother and daughter, and Bella plays the daughter and Toni Collette plays the mother. And the opening episode where the daughter appears a bit directionless, she's got a job as a sort of 911 operator in this tiny little town. She's living in this little town because her mother had been sick, and when her mother had got better, she basically stayed there with her. I went into it not really knowing anything about it other than my friend had said, go and watch this, it's really good. There is an incident in that opening episode which happens in this diner and suddenly makes you start to question, is the mother who she actually says she is just this small town mother, or is there something else going on here? And it starts to blow up into this much bigger conspiracy, and the daughter wants to find out more about what's going on. Tonally, if you like things like Ozark, I think you would like this show. It's very much in that sort of vein of them being sort of shadowy figures going on behind the background. And of course, we said before that Ozark is tonally quite similar to Breaking Bad as well. So, I mean, it's in that kind of area of storytelling. Hmm. Really solid performances throughout. It's got a storyline which has some really interesting twists and turns to it. It is a sort of thriller conspiracy thing. It's very difficult to tell the direction it's going to go in, and they sort of seem to be going one way and then suddenly turns a different direction. I'm really enjoying it so far. I'm about 6 episodes in, and there's 8 episodes in the series, so I'm getting towards the end of it. But yeah, it's called Pieces of Her. It's on Netflix right now. I would thoroughly recommend it. It is a really solid piece of work, and Toni Collette is a fabulous actress. Bella Heathcote, I didn't really know. I mean, she's Australian, so obviously she's been in Neighbours, she was in Man in the High Castle as well, so I must have seen her before, I just didn't really recognise her. She was in the second and third seasons of Man in the High Castle. She was popped up in Awkwafina is Nora from Queens as well, and Pride, Prejudice and Zombies. She was in 50 Shades Darker apparently as well, but there's some other names. Omari Hardwick is in there, who's in Army of the Dead and Power as well. He plays Ghost in Power. And Terry O'Quinn, who you'll know from Lost and also popped up in a Wi-Fi Power. Oh, yeah, he's been in a bunch of other things as well. So he's one of the recurring roles in there. So there are some faces you will recognise definitely in here.
Sounds good.
Definitely worth watching. In terms of other stuff I've been doing this week, there's been a couple of events. MegaCon Birmingham, which is a new Comic Con event. Went to that yesterday. It was on Saturday and Sunday, but I couldn't get there on Saturday. But I went there on Sunday, and really good little Comic Con event. I mean, MegaCon was set up by the guys who originally did MCM. Because if you know the history of the big MCM Comic Cons, MCM Comic Con was set up by these group of guys. They built it into this huge, massive brand and then sold that on to ReedPop, who are the big Comic Con producers that do New York Comic Con and I think Atlanta as well, and a bunch of other places. Emerald City Comic Con they do as well. MCM, after all the pandemic stuff, dropped a couple of the dates off their usual standard tour. So they took Manchester out and they took one of the Birmingham dates out. And what the guys that used to own MCM did was said, oh, well, we'll pick those dates up and we'll set up this new con, which is called MegaCon. And they took over the dates that were vacated by MCM for Manchester and Birmingham. It's a much smaller con than MCM. It was probably, I don't know, maybe a third of the size, probably closer to a quarter of the size. So I mean, it was one hall pretty much in the NEC in Birmingham. All the usual sort of stuff that you'd expect to see there, a bunch of comic book stands, not as many many as you've seen in the past, but that could be to do with just the fact that it costs a fortune to drive anywhere at the moment, and also that the indie comic book creators maybe are one of the people that suffered quite a lot throughout the pandemic. So, you know, maybe there's a few of them out there. I don't know. But there were a few comic book creators there, some artists, a bunch of people selling their usual sort of geeky wares that you would get at that sort of Comic Con. Guest wise, a lot of the usual suspects. David Bradley, who does a lot of these Comic Cons, who's from Game of Thrones and Harry Potter and Doctor Who. Barrowman was there as well. You got a bunch of Doctor Who's, Paul McGann, Colin Baker, Peter Davidson. Nicola Bryant was there, who played Colin Baker's companion. Andrew Lee Potts was there. Danny John-Jules and Robert Llewellyn from Red Dwarf. John Rhys-Davies from Lord of the Rings. Bunch of voice actors from Arcane,
oh yeah,
video
yeah.
game and Apex Legends, and one of the lead voices from Genshin Impact as well, and just Sailor Moon. So there was a whole bunch of different people, but a lot of them are the type of people that you know are usually the sort of second tier guests that you see at most Comic Cons that are out there. So decent enough if you wanted to go and meet those sort of people. It was a reasonably well organized event. There was a lot of cosplay around. I've got some photos which we're going up soon onto the Instagram feed. Didn't manage to get any videos of any of the interviews at this particular event. They did do some stage stuff with, I think Barrowman did stage thing on Saturday, and they did interviews with David Bradley and Colin Baker and the Doctor Who's and the Red Dwarf guys and all that sort of stuff. So there was some good, decent panels with the guys that they had there. It was just the guest list wasn't quite as big as maybe you would expect from like an MCM event, but I wasn't really expecting that from this because it is the first time they've done it and it is a new event, but certainly I'll be one I will be watching with interest and seeing how it grows. They do this and they do Manchester, and presumably they'll come back and do Birmingham again as well next year. So definitely one to watch out for. But if you're looking for a Comic-Con event, MegaCon Live, certainly one worth going to check out. There is one other thing that happened last night as well, which we probably should talk a little bit about. The Oscars. Anything interesting happened at the Oscars you can think of?
Yeah, I think something might have been trending on Twitter for a good amount of time. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of you realised there was an incident at the Oscars last night where essentially what happened was Chris Rock came out to introduce the documentaries category. And, you know, I mean, he's Chris Rock. He comes out, he makes a few jokes. And one of the jokes he made was about Jada Pinkett Smith, Will's wife. And it was an off-the-cuff remark that he made about looking forward to seeing you in G.I. Jane 2. And this remark was made because of the fact that Jada has no hair, or she has a shaved head. And of course, if you've ever seen the movie G.I. Jane, which Jada wasn't in, it was Demi Moore in the lead role of that, and she shaved all her hair off for it because it was about a woman in the army. So that's what the joke was referenced to. The problem is, and the reason I think Will took most offense to it, Jada was obviously visibly upset about the gag, and Jada has alopecia, which means that her hair is falling out, and it's due to an autoimmune issue. So it was kind of a dick joke for Chris Rock to make. And it was interesting because I went and sort of watched it on TV this morning, and Will had initially kind of laughed at the joke. He actually won Best Actor later and made an apology, not to Chris Rock, but made an apology to the Academy, and was sort of saying, you know, I understand that people will make remarks and things and you're supposed to smile through them and that sort of stuff. So I think that's probably, he was kind of trying to take it in the sort of jokey spirit, but I think he then looked over at Jada. Jada was visibly upset by it. Will then gets up and open hand slaps Chris Rock, who is on the stage, across the face, and then sits back down again and basically shouts at him, "Keep my wife's name out of your effing mouth." And it looked initially when it first happened like it was part of a skit. But when Will shouted that, and it was actually using expletives in it, which is not something you do on a Oscar broadcast that goes out at like 8 p.m. on a main network in the US, became very apparent that it wasn't a skit and he was genuinely upset by it. So that happened. Chris Rock actually powered through it pretty well. And I mean, you could tell he was visibly shaken by it, but got through it and got to the presenting the award. As I say, it was kind of a a dick joke for Chris Rock to make. He may not have been aware that that was the reason why Jada lost his hair. I mean, I'd give him the benefit of the doubt of that. I don't know, because, I mean, she has apparently mentioned it, but I wasn't aware of it until this all happened. So he may not have been. I may just thought, oh, she shaved her head. But equally, Will shouldn't have got up and smacked the guy on live TV. So, yeah, it's an odd one, particularly if you watch the broadcast, as there's sort of, yeah, a lot of people going, oh, you know, violence shouldn't be celebrated. And literally after they presented the award for the documentary, it's like, here's a celebration of 50 years of The Godfather. You know, it's just like one of the most violent movies. Right. You know, yeah. Totally, it seems a bit weird. But yeah, it was very odd. I'm sure the producers of the Oscars were very happy because the amount of eyeballs that's got on it and the amount of stuff that was trending, I mean, not for the right reasons, but I mean, it's press coverage for the Oscars. So yeah, any thoughts?
Well, Chris is clearly in the wrong. I mean, because most of the time the presenters have been like comedians. I know that Ricky Gervais has hosted some stuff and he's, you know, made speeches and stuff. But I don't remember Ricky saying anything close to something like this. I mean, he's made like big speeches before, but nothing
I don't know. I mean, Ricky's jokes have been very close to the knuckle. I'm not sure that Ricky would have made that.
I don't think he would have said that, no.
If he had known that was the reason that she hadn't got any hair, I'm not convinced Ricky would necessarily have made that joke, because you're joking mm-hmm. about an illness. I mean, imagine if it wasn't an autoimmune disease and alopecia and she'd lost her hair because of cancer, you would never make that joke. So it mm-hmm. wasn't really appropriate. But like I say, I don't know whether Chris knew that was the reason she'd shaved her head. So yeah. I would give him the benefit of the doubt of that. But
I mean, I don't advocate for like obviously violence and stuff, but I don't really blame Will for having a human reaction and flipping out and kind of slapping him. Like yeah. that's just that those things just happen sometimes. I'm not saying Will was right or wrong to do that, but it's kind of a understandable reaction. Mm-hmm. But like, if you're going to be on an Oscar stage and you're going to make a joke which might offend somebody, just try and come up with, first of all, a better joke, because it wasn't even remotely funny at all. Mm-hmm. Obviously it was kind of offensive, but just make a normal joke and then just present the award. I mean, it's obviously trying to make a joke is a way of like getting the crowd up kind of thing and then presenting the award. Because otherwise, if you put a comedian on a stage like that and they just present an award and that's it, and you'd think, oh, that was a bit like bland, flat. Maybe.
Yeah.
Just make a joke that is just better and, you know, more just better in every way, shape and form, I suppose. It's certainly a lot of people talking, I suppose, but yeah, Chris is definitely in the wrong here.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I mean, it's, as I say, I don't know whether he knew, but yeah, once you kind of know why she shaved her head, it was a very poor taste joke, really. But as I say, I don't know whether he knew that was the reason, whether he just seed her and thought, oh, she shaved her head, this is a funny gag. I don't know. That was kind of the major incident at the awards this year, and he then goes on to win for King Richard. That's sort of quite interesting because he made an apology to the Academy. It was sort of like, I hope the Academy invites me back. He also makes a point about something along the lines of, I want to be a advocate for peace as well, which is, people going, that's a weird thing to say after you just slapped somebody. But I kind of get that. I think Will was regretting what he did and was saying, mm-hmm. I shouldn't have reacted like that. But
he didn't disturb the peace, Chris did.
So. Well, yeah. So, you know, yeah, interesting and slightly strange night, particularly watching the awards straight after that. Sean Puffy Coombs came up afterwards and was like, quite sweet, sort of going, you know, we'll get you in a room and we'll sort it out afterwards, you know. But here's the next award sort of thing. That aside, onto the actual winners of the awards this year. Coda won Best Picture.
It's on Apple, isn't it?
I believe so, yeah. So that won Best Picture. Andrea DeBose won for West Side Story for Supporting Actress. Cruella won Best Costume Design. June did really well, actually. June picked up 6 awards. A lot of them technical, but I mean, it was Best Sound, Best Original Score. Well, yeah, Best Sound, Best Original Score, Best Film Editing, Cinematography, Production Design, Visual Effects as well. So yeah, I mean, that did really well. Will Smith, as I said, won for Best Actor. Jessica Chastain won for Best Actress. Jane Campion won for Best Director. No Time to Die won for Best Original Song, beating out Encanto, which is just impressive considering that's all over the place. Encanto did win Best Animated Feature, I think, as you would probably expect. It was up against Luca, which was the other sort of win, Raya and the Last Dragon, Mitchells vs. the Machines, and Flea. I haven't watched Encanto yet. Have you seen Luca as well? Because you've watched Encanto, haven't you, I think?
Yeah, Luca's a better film, so.
There you go.
I wasn't like massively impressed by Encanto. I thought it was good, but I thought Luca was a lot better. What did you say the other one was? Raya.
Raya and the Last Dragon and the Mitchells versus the Machines.
I thought the Raya film was actually kind of bad, but no, Luca was the one I would have chosen out of that. And Encanto's still pretty good. Obviously, it's got the Don't Talk About Bruno song.
Yes.
Which one of the teachers at the school that I clean out was talking to another one of the teachers about that the other day. She said, like, oh, my kids put it on, like, again, and it, because of the film and stuff.
Amy Schumer did make a joke about the fact that she had a three-year-old, so she hasn't seen any of the films this year. She's just seen Encanto 150 times. But so that seems to be for people with young kids, that seems to be the case a lot of them,
which is exactly what happened with Frozen in 2013.
Well, exactly. Yes.
Don't let it we'll let it go.
That's true. As to say, June definitely the overall winner of the awards, but eventful night. Oh yeah, Kenneth Branagh won for best original screenplay for Belfast as well, which was nice to see because I know that's a very personal story to him. It's interesting, certainly, awards last night. If you want to see any of the clips around the Will Smith incident, all over the place, go and check Twitter. The BBC has it on their website as well. So, I mean, the clips are all over the place if you want to kind of read a bit more about exactly what happened there. But interesting to see where that goes over the next few days. But that's all the stuff we've been doing this week. Moving on to some TV and film news.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We kick off the TV and film news with the renewals, cancellations and pickups. One proper cancellation this week, which was Archive 81, which is cancelled by Netflix after one season. That was a horror thing, I think. I don't know whether... Did you watch any of that?
I hadn't actually heard of it until this news popped up. But I saw a lot of people very devastated and I was like, I don't know what this is.
It was a horror series, but I mean, I was sort of vaguely aware of the name. And I mean, it was in the Netflix top 10 for a while. But yes, I know there was a lot of people very upset that that didn't get renewed to Netflix gonna Netflix, I think, is one of the sort of, you know what they're like.
Maybe they should have told more people that the show was out because they don't do that.
That is their biggest problem, is their marketing for individual shows is not good. One of the other things which I think may have suffered the same fate, Pacific Rim the Black, which is an animated series, that's back on the 19th of April for its second season, but they've also announced that's the final season as well. I don't know whether that was a cancellation or whether that was a creative decision, but they have announced the date and also that that's the final season as well. So that's another Netflix show. On the renewals, there's quite a few this week. And Just Like That, which is the Sex and the City spin-off, that's been renewed for a second season at HBO Max. My Brilliant Friend, that's been renewed for a fourth and final season at HBO. So technically that probably should have been in cancellations. But yes, My Brilliant Friend, that's the Italian language thing that has been renewed for a fourth and final season.
I've heard some really good things about that, actually.
Yes, it's supposed to be very good. It doesn't really feel like my sort of show, but if you like that sort of thing, I'm sure it's very good. Then the CW finally did a bunch of big renewals. The Flash is back for a ninth season. Superman and Lois back for season 3. Riverdale and its bizarre craziness back for season 7. Walker season 3. Kung Fu season 3. All-American season 5. Nancy Drew season 4. So that's all the things they have renewed. Notably missing things they haven't renewed yet: Legends of Tomorrow, which is currently on season 7, Batwoman, which is currently on season 3, Dynasty, which is on season 5, Charmed and Legacies, both of which are on season 4. Those haven't had an announcement yet. As we mentioned before, one of the issues with CW at the moment is the fact that they are potentially selling the channel, so they are being a little more cautious than maybe they would have been in the past as what they are renewing and what they are getting rid of, because the problem was they obviously have to renew some shows because they do still have the channel. If they do sell the channel, they are still going to be supplying shows to the CW as well, but there are going to be other contractual things in there So presumably they can run stuff on HBO Max as well as running it on the CW. I suspect there's some maneuvering going on regarding all that background stuff. They've been a little more cautious. So usually they'll renew in January, February, and it's been March this year. And that is why we've only had those shows and not absolutely everything. We still don't know about Legends, Batwoman, Dynasty, Charmed, and Legacies yet. But that doesn't mean they won't get renewed. It's just they're maybe a little bit more on the bubble than the other stuff was.
Strange for so many CW shows to be on the bubble.
Yeah.
Especially kind of some of the DC stuff, which almost automatically gets renewed.
Yeah. It is a little odd this year. As I say, they are being a lot more cautious than they would usually be because of the fact that there is this potential sale happening of the channel. So we'll see moving forward, but hopefully we get renews. I would like to see a renewal for Legends. Batwoman, I can kind of take it or leave it. Dynasty, I haven't watched. Charmed, I wasn't a huge fan of that reboot, but I know some people really like it. And Legacies, of course, is the Vampire Diaries spin-off thing. So that I haven't watched because it hasn't aired over here at all. So there are some other shows on the CW like Stargirl, which third season of that has been made but hasn't yet to air. Fourth season of a thing called In the Dark, which has never aired over here. Roswell, New Mexico was already renewed for a fourth season after the third season premiered last year. The other thing they haven't renewed are all the new shows that launched last year. So that's 4400, Naomi, All-American Homecoming, which is a spin-off of All-American. They haven't renewed any of those yet, but that's possibly going to be done in a separate batch because they're all first season shows. So we'll see. So they have still got quite a lot of stuff outstanding on the CW in terms of renewals, but Stargirl missing isn't a surprise because the next season hasn't aired. Same with Roswell, New Mexico, because we knew that was already renewed.
Yeah,
we'll see as we get closer to May, which is the traditional bloodbath that we talk about every year. We'll see as we get a little bit closer to that, but they've got sort of a month to make some announcements one way or another for those shows. The BBC also had quite a big renewal as well. They announced last week that four of their big dramas have been renewed: The Tourist, The Responder, Vigil, and Time. The Tourist, which is the Jamie Dornan thing, which I hadn't actually seen. I have watched the other three. The Responder was the Martin Freeman police drama set in Liverpool, which I thought the first season of that was really good. Vigil was the one about the murder on the submarine, and the submarine was called Vigil. So presumably the second season isn't going to be about a murder on a submarine. Presumably it's going to be about the police characters, I would have thought. We'll see where they go with the second season of that, but that, although it's still called Vigil, I presume it's going to be set somewhere else entirely. And Time, that was the Stephen Graham and Sean Bean series set in a prison where Stephen Graham plays the prison guard.
Yeah.
And Sean Bean played the prisoner. Second season of that is going to be a bit more anthology because that was sort of a self-contained story. So the second season is going to be set in a female prison. It'll have a completely different cast, but it will be about life in a prison again. So that's going to be more of a kind of anthology thing, whereas Responder, Vigil, and Tourist are going to be straight continuations, I think. Good, solid drama coming out of the BBC at the moment. They're making some decent... I mean, the BBC always makes decent drama, but I don't know. Did you catch any of those?
No, I've not watched any of those. I did have potentially the interest to watch The Tourist because I do like Jamie Dornan. He was very good in The Fall, which had Gillian Anderson on the BBC and stuff. That was a really, really good show. Probably one of BBC's best shows, to be honest, but just haven't got around to clicking on the thing yet.
Yeah, Responder was very solid show. Vigil was really good and Time was really good. So as I say, I've not watched The Tourist yet. It is one of the things that's on my long list of stuff to catch up with.
Yep.
In terms of pickups and other news, Star Trek Prodigy, which was the animated series, has finally got a UK date. That is coming to Nickelodeon in April. They didn't announce the date when they originally said it was coming in April, but I think they've now said it's April 25th. I could be wrong about that, but I think that's what they're saying. So that will be coming to Nickelodeon. The reason it's on Nickelodeon is because of the fact that Nickelodeon co-produced it with Paramount Plus. So I think it goes on Paramount Plus and Nickelodeon in the US. So Nickelodeon are getting it in the UK, and presumably it will be on Paramount Plus when that eventually launches over here. That's got Janeway in it. Well, sort of. It's got an animated version of Janeway in it, and it's about a bunch of kids that find a Starfleet ship. So it's sort of a fun animated kids adventure thing. that is. But that looks like it could be quite good fun. But that's Star Trek Prodigy. Sky have picked up the true crime limited series The Staircase, starring Colin Firth and Toni Collette. That's going to be premiering in spring on Sky. And now they haven't said which channel, but it sounds very Sky Atlantic to me. It is a HBO Max series, I think, in the US. So it would make sense if it's probably Sky Atlantic. You may be aware of the story because there was a Netflix documentary which was also called The Staircase, which was following the actual real life, but this is a drama version of that. It further explores the life of Michael Peterson and his sprawling North Carolina family and the suspicious death of his wife, Kathleen Peterson. If you remember the documentary, she was found dead at the bottom of a staircase, hence the reason why it's called The Staircase. And he was blamed for that murder, and it becomes a very long, drawn-out saga about whether he actually did it or not. The documentary was fascinating, and I'll be interested to see what they do with a sort of drama version of it.
Yeah, and I remember when that came out on Netflix, a lot of people were talking about it.
It's interesting because the Joe versus Carol thing on Peacock, which is obviously also sort of a drama based on a Netflix documentary, although, I mean, technically, I think they're both based on podcasts originally, but I struggled with the Joe versus Carol thing. I think because the characters are so crazy in real life, making a comedy drama thing about it didn't really work for me because it's so ridiculous in real life. It's very difficult to make something that works as a drama that can sort of overshadow the real events. Whereas with this, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be an interesting one. And surprise, very quick turnaround, Only Murders in the Building season 2. That's getting a premiere on the 28th of June on Disney Plus in the UK and Hulu in the US for its second season. I loved the first season of this, but it's only 9 months ago when they launched it, so they've turned that around.
Yeah.
They've turned that around really, really fast. Although I think part of the reason for that is obviously, as the title suggests, it is all based really in one building, so it's all standing sets. So there's very little that takes place like outside of that building. So they've kind of write the script and then all the sets and everything is already built and already there. So I guess that shortens your lead time quite a lot. Presumably that's how they managed to turn it around so quick. But yeah, that's it was about 9 months ago when the first season ran. So I'm very happy to see that back because the first season was wonderful and really, really enjoyable. That will be back 28th of June. That returns on Disney Plus and Hulu. On to some other bigger stories. Roku Channel have ordered a new comedy, which is called Slip from Zoe Lister-Jones. It's a 7-episode scripted comedy created and written by Zoe Lister-Jones, who also stars in and directs it. So basically a one-man band or one-woman band. It tells the story of Mae Cannon, who is a 30-something that finds herself restless inside a marriage that totally works. The series follows Mae through a fantastical journey of parallel universes as she enters new relationships, trying to find a way back to her partner, ultimately herself. It basically sounds like a sort of romance version of Quantum Leap, which is a really interesting, slightly strange idea, or Sliding Doors kind of mashed in with a sort of, I don't know, Quantum Leap-y sort of idea. Intriguing thing with this. I don't really know Zoe Lister-Jones at all. She's worked on something called How It End and Disappointment Boulevard. She also wrote, directed, and produced The Craft Legacy, which I didn't see either. But yeah, I mean, good honor for landing this. It's nice to see Roku coming up with original stuff as well. So this could be one worth checking out. Roku Channel, for those of you that don't realize, is if you've got Sky, you have the Roku Channel. It's an app that is on with, like, you know, all the Apple TV and Netflix apps. It's in there. So you can get the Roku Channel on there, which is worth going to check through because they have got some interesting content on there, but they've now started making original stuff and this will be one of them, and it's called Slip. So any interest in this?
Sounds kind of interesting. We'll see what a trailer looks like. That'll give us a good idea. It's interesting to see what Roku are going to be able to do. Obviously, the competition in the streaming world is quite fierce. Of course, one of the advantages they've got is instead of saying like, hey, give us $5 or $10 a month for another thing, it's free. So
yes,
that's really, really good. So we'll see what they can come up with. Obviously, they kind of adopted, I suppose, all the Quibi content. They did the Zoe's Christmas thing, which is which was great. Hopefully they can continue that, obviously, one day. But yeah, we'll see what they can come up with the actual original stuff as well, because there is actually quite a lot on that platform. So yeah, we'll see what they can, what this is ends up being like.
Yeah, I mean, that is the thing. It is free. It's one of those things that if you're looking for something and thinking, oh, I can't find anything to watch, it's worth going to have a look through the Rocky channel, because there is a lot of older content on there as well, which is, you know, box sets and that sort of stuff, that you may find something that's on the Rocky channel which you haven't watched, or is sort of an older box set you might watch. But there is some original stuff on there. And the Quibi content, I mean, Quibi as a platform wasn't great. The content was really good. And they have renewed some of that content as well. There are new series coming for those. Not all of them, but they have renewed some of the shows that were originally Quibi shows. So worth keeping an eye on the Rocky channel. And of course, like you said, the Zoe's Christmas special was on there as well. So definitely worth keeping an eye on. That's called Slip. And don't know when that's going to get released, but that's a 7-episode scripted comedy they've commissioned. On to some bits of casting news. Interview with the Vampire, which is the new AMC big franchise that they paid a fortune for from Anne Rice. It's based on the Anne Rice novels, and they bought the Vampire Chronicles stuff, and they also bought the Mayfair Witches, which is the sort of interconnected witch books, and they bought the whole lot from Anne Rice before she sadly passed away, and her son Christopher is involved in the TV series as well. If you're unfamiliar with the novels, the Vampire Chronicles is 11 books. They start off with a character called Louis, who is an 18th century French colonial aristocrat who is turned into what I always describe as the world's whiniest vampire by the extremely charismatic Lestat. The book series continues. It focuses more on Lestat, because Lestat is just far more interesting as a character. They've announced some more casting for that show. They've announced Eric Bornstein, who is going to be playing a character called Daniel Malloy, who is an investigative journalist nearing the end of his career, who's given a second chance at an interview of a lifetime. In the books, he's the interviewer in Interview with the Vampire. If you're aware of the movie version, which had Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise in it, I think Christian Slater played the interviewer in that. So it was a much younger character. Eric's a lot older. But I think that's a sort of interesting way of setting it up. I can't remember whether it actually mentioned the age of the character in the books or not, but basically the interviewer is sort of interviewing Louis, and he's recounting the story of how he met Lestat and got turned into a vampire. Eric Bornstein's probably best known for talk radio. He's the really big thing that he did, which he was sort of a novelist, playwright and actor, and starred in the film version of it as well as doing that on stage. Been in a load of other things. Billions he was in quite recently, in Succession, are the two other things that he's popped up in fairly recently as well. You've also got Jacob Anderson from Game of Thrones is playing Louis in the TV show. Sam Reed from Lamb of God and Hunting is playing Lestat. Bailey Bass, who's in the Avatar sequels, is playing Claudia, who's the young girl. And Asad Zaman, who is from Appletree Yard, is playing Rashid, if you know any of those characters from the books. So this has got a pretty good producer behind it. It's executive produced by Mark Johnson, who was involved in Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, Halt and Catch Fire, Rectify. Creator and showrunner is Rollin Jones, who was involved in Friday Night Lights and Perry Mason. And Christopher Rice, who's the son of Anne Rice and the overseer of her work at this point, is also involved in it. It's a really interesting group of people they've pulled together for it. I think the casting's been really good. They're kind of setting this up as being something which could run alongside Walking Dead. So they've got zombies, vampires and witches all on the same channel, I think. You know, because they are prepping this, I think, as something that they're hoping is going to be as big as the Walking Dead franchise.
I'm not quite sure how it could be, because Walking Dead's got quite a sort of massive following. And obviously not just because of the characters, but also because of the actors. You know, people really like Norman and Andrew and Melissa and all the other people. That's where Walker Stalker Con comes from. Not that that's around anymore, but you know, that's what that's for. But yeah, I suppose, because like with Walking Dead, you can kind of, hey, let's take a couple of these characters and spin it off, as we've seen with a few of the shows they're going to be doing. Walking Dead's a very flexible IP.
Yeah.
Whereas with something like Mad Men, Breaking Bad, unless you're doing like prequels, obviously with Better Call Saul, you can't really sort of do loads of things with Breaking Bad. Whereas with Walking Dead, you kind of can, because you can sort of say, hey, let's stick these characters characters in a city with zombies and to tell a story there. So I think for AMC, it's interesting because they're going to lose Better Call Saul this year because it's going to finish. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how many more films and series they can do. Obviously, you had the one with Jesse. I can't remember the name of it at the moment.
El Camino. Yes.
That's it. Yeah, the car. They had that. But Mad Men finished a while ago. Obviously, that was a big thing for AMC. Walking Dead's really big. So it's time for them to probably do some new stuff because they had things like Halt and Catch Fire, which ended, and Hell on Wheels. I don't know how many people watched that.
That was a great show as well. Yeah.
Into the Badlands, which finished. So they've lost quite a lot of shows, some because they got rid of them and some because they just naturally ended because you can't just keep doing like 10, 15 seasons of Breaking Bad. But interesting to see what they do with this. Like you said, they've kind of got zombies and vampires and stuff. So I doubt in the future they could ask Kirkman to adapt something else.
No.
Because, you know, there's a whole lawsuit thing going on. So they'll have to just look elsewhere. I mean, Invincible already went to Amazon, didn't it?
Yeah.
We'll see what they can do.
I mean, they have got a bunch of scripted series ordered. I mean, none of them are quite as big in franchise terms as the Vampire Chronicle books. I mean, I know what you're saying about The Walking Dead. And The Walking Dead, like you say, does have the advantage that there is one series of books and then they've come up with a bunch of spin-offs to be able to kind of take characters and move them around and stuff. With Vampire Chronicles and the Mayfair Witches, there is some crossover between those, and they are making shows for Mayfair Witches and for the Vampire Chronicles. So it is already kind of quite a big franchise, and those books are huge bestsellers. So there is a lot of potential there to make it quite big, but you are restricted, I think, a lot more in sticking to the words on the page, I think, with those. I mean, they'll tweak them to make it work for TV, but you don't have quite the amount of flexibility of going, oh, those characters are popular, let's spin that off into something else. I don't think you've got as much flexibility to do that. But there is enough for them to be able to get 10, 11 seasons out of this without any problem at all. So even if they don't do a bunch of spin-offs, they've already got Mayfair Witches show, Vampire show, and they can potentially do 11 seasons of a Vampire show with just the work that's already there. So there is a lot to work with and potential to build this into quite a big thing. And every show has to start somewhere. Like you say, the actors are very popular in The Walking Dead, but there's nothing to say that if this show hits with people, the actors in this show will become huge stars as well. So, I mean, I think there is potential there, and I think it was a solid buy for them. As I say, they have got a bunch of other new shows. There's got some sci-fi things coming up as well, and there's a Spanish language thing and, you know, other bits and pieces as well, the legal dramas and thrillers and things. So they're not sitting back and not making anything. And sometimes when you make a show as well, you don't know that it is going to be a big hit. I mean, look at Breaking Bad. You know, I think that took everybody by surprise. Difficult to tell sometimes, but I think certainly this is a fair bet that there are a lot of fans around for the Interview with the Vampire books. So if they get this right, it could be a huge, huge franchise for them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Moving on to another bit of casting, we've got a bit more about the Gotham Knights pilot, which is the CW thing that they're making. This is the series which is set in the wake of Bruce Wayne's murder, where his rebellious adopted son forges an unlikely alliance with the children of Batman's enemies when they are all framed for killing the Caped Crusader. And as the city's most wanted criminals, this renegade band of misfits must fight to clear their names. But in a Gotham with no Dark Knight to protect it, the city descends into the most dangerous it's ever been. However, hope comes from the most unexpected of places as the team of mismatched fugitives will become the next generation of saviors known as the Gotham Knights. So that's the setup for it. The first big bit of casting that came out for it, there's some other casting as well. Misha Collins, who of course everybody knows as the actor from Supernatural, played Castiel, is going to be playing Harvey Dent in this, who of course is Two-Face, which I can see. I mean, I think he's a really, really good choice for that. If you've ever seen Castiel where he turns slightly evil, he does that duality thing very, very well. He did post on Twitter saying, I've asked if my version of the character could be wearing a beige trench coat over the grey suit. I'm just not sure I'd be comfortable in front of a camera without one, which I thought was quite fun. But I really like that bit of casting. I think that's really good. We don't know how big Harvey Dent's role is going to be in this, because as it sort of says, it's about the main characters are the sort of kids of those villains and some of the heroes. So I don't know whether he's going to be a recurring role or whether he's going to be like the main villain or what. We don't know at the moment. And it is only a pilot right now. So, you know, it's not like the whole series, but we'll see. Harvey Dent is an interesting person to pick up because everybody knows, obviously, he's Two-Face, but he has also been a protector of Gotham, and I don't know what they're going to use as the background for the character, but there was a point in the comic books after the Batman Hush storyline where Harvey Dent undergoes plastic surgery and removes the scarring off his face, and that essentially eradicates the Two-Face personality. And he's even trusted by Batman to become the protector of Gotham during the events of the... there's a brilliant run called 52 where Superman, Batman and Wonder Woman basically disappear for a year. And when Batman goes off, he leaves Harvey Dent as the protector of Gotham. But when Batman comes back, Dent basically feels like he's been pushed out and doesn't really have a purpose and resorts back to his own ways and re-scars his face and becomes Two-Face again. So Harvey's an interesting character because of that duality. So I'd be intrigued to see what they do with
it. It's interesting. I remember when I was on, I think last time when we were talking about the Penguin show getting picked up, and I just said like, Colin's great in the role, but I'm just not really interested in Penguin. But this I'm actually more interested in because I'm interested in seeing Two-Face again and seeing what they do with the Harvey Dent stuff and the dual personality kind of stuff that's there. So maybe surprisingly, I'm actually more interested in this than the Penguin show.
Yeah.
So plus you've got other characters, you know, you've got the Bat Family characters in here. So there's just more, I feel, on offer that I like in this as opposed to what Penguin show is doing.
Yeah.
We'll see how it works out, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm slightly nervous that this has been picked as a CW show.
That is the one sticking point, yeah.
Yeah, I feel if it was a HBO Max show, I'd be more excited for it because it could be darker, but better production value. We'll have to see what they do with it. They have announced some other bits of cast, which we were announced a while ago, but Fallon Smythe, who was in Grown-ish, is playing Harper Rowe, who is a character from the comic book Streetwise acerbic, often underestimated, the blue-haired bisexual is a gifted engineer who could fix anything, but what Harper wants most of all is to repair the broken lives of her and her brother Cullen, the only person she trusts. Tyler DeShara, who was in something called Relish and the Virgin of Highland Park, is playing Cullen. After years of hiding his true self from his abusive parents, the transgender teen is tired of being polite and agreeable. Clever and adept at reading human nature, Cullen is ready to fight his own battles. Both characters have appeared as Batman allies in the comic books, so those are comic book characters and reasonably true depictions of those comic book characters as well. Navia Robertson, who's in Raven's Home, is playing Carrie Kelly, which is an interesting pickup. That was a character that first appeared as the Robin in the Batman Dark Knight Returns Frank Miller novels, although the character has then re-emerged, pushed into the main DC continuity as well. So the Dark Knight Returns things were very much out of continuity, whereas they then decided they were going to introduce that character into continuity, which was, I think, part of the New 52 run and the DC rebirth. So that character has been around now, but she's described as fearless, idealistic and plucky as hell. Carrie talked her way into being Batman's unlikely sidekick. If there was a burning building or a person in need, she's the first to run in, just as long as she's home for curfew. This will be the first time that Carrie Kelly has appeared as a character in live action. You've got Olivia Rose Keegan, who was in the stupidly named High School Musical, the musical, the series. She played Lily in that. She's playing Dula Dent, who, as you would guess from the name, is, I think, daughter of Harvey Dent. Abrasive, unpredictable, little unhinged, Dula is above all a survivor, born in Arkham Asylum and abandoned by her father, the most dangerous nine in Gotham. Dula's forged herself into a brutal fighter and skilled thief. The character has appeared, played by a different actress in Batwoman, but this is going to be a different version of it. The weirdest one is Oscar Morgan, who I assume is a Brit actor because he appeared in Warren and appeared in an episode of Death in Paradise, so I'm guessing he's British. He's playing a character called Turner Hayes, and then it goes on to say, despite the murder of his biological parents, Turner remains resilient and driven to live up to his billionaire's adopted father's name. While charming and soulful, Turner has never quite felt comfortable in this world of wealth and privilege. So that appears to be the adopted son that they're talking about, rather than any of the other characters. Like, there are a whole bunch of Robins you could pick from, but they've decided to make one up for the TV show, because that isn't a character that is in the books anywhere. So that seems like a really odd decision to me, unless they're using that name to obfuscate for somebody else. That seems like a really bizarre choice. to me. I mean, I know they did it with Batwoman, but they sort of did that out of necessity because, you know, the lead actress changed. But it seems like a really weird choice to do it for this when you could have just taken the adopted out and used Damian, or you could have used another version of Nightwing, or you could have used Tim Drake, who hasn't really been used. I mean, we've seen him in Titans, but he hasn't really been used yet. Or Red Hood, who would be the obvious one to use. So it's a little weird that that's where they've gone with this.
I wonder if it's because they've used so many of them in Titans and they want to use something else.
Yeah,
because Warner Brothers, apart from The Flash, Warner Brothers doesn't really like using the same character in different places. Well, you could say Superman, but Henry Cavill hasn't been on screen for so long.
Yeah.
But obviously you've got Tyler in the TV role, but you've got currently Grant and Ezra as both versions of The Flash. It's the only example I can think of as to where the same character is being used twice, because you've got all the Robins obviously in Titans. So maybe they wanted to use something different. I don't know.
I guess it just, it's,
but you could have used Damian, like you said, because they aren't using that character anywhere yet.
And Damian, if you're talking about somebody that thinks it's a good idea to unite the children of the villains of Gotham, Damian would be the obvious choice to do that.
Yeah, because he's a little rebel.
Yeah. So you have a character right there you could have touched, unless they're not being allowed to use Damian, possibly.
That's a possibility, yeah.
It's a really odd decision to invent a character for it, if that is the case. But, I mean, those descriptions, I think, came from Variety. So, I mean, it wasn't like they were on some sort of fan site. They were, it's weird that that's where they've decided to go to. But, you know, I mean, we'll see. As I say, that is only a pilot right now, so it may not go anywhere. Given the state of the CW as well, I mean, they're being fairly cautious. So it may not go anywhere. It may get moved to HBO Max. It may not get made at all after the pilot. But we'll see what happens with that. But that's Gotham Knights anyway. So that's all the news for this week. Just some time for some highlights for next week on TV. So speaking of superheroes, next week's pretty good for superhero stuff. We have Moon Knight starting on the 30th of March. That's on Wednesday. That is on Disney Plus. That will be the first appearance of Moonlight. I'm very much looking forward to this. The clips for that show look really, really good.
I'm really excited for this. Really, really excited.
Yeah, looks like it's going to be really fun, that show. Legends of Tomorrow also returns. Flash is back this week as well, but that's on Tuesday and we go out on Tuesday, so we announced that last week. Legends of Tomorrow going out on Wednesday. That's for its seventh season. That's at 8 p.m. on Sky Max. There is a show called Professionals, which starts on 5 Action. That's also on Wednesday. That's at 9 p.m. That is the 30th of March. And this is the show we mentioned a few weeks ago. Stars Brendan Fraser and Tom Welling in it. After their advanced medical satellite explodes on deployment, billionaire futurist Peter Swan, played by Brendan Fraser, and his fiancée, medical visionary Grace Davila, played by Elena Ayana, turn to a hardened former counterintelligence officer to help them out, who's played by Tom Welling. That's got quite a good cast to it, but that's called Professionals. That's on 5 Action, which is the channel that was formerly known as the Paramount Network, and they changed their name because of the Paramount Plus launch. That's 30th of March at 9 p.m. That lands on 5 Action. Also starting Hacks, that is coming to Prime Video. That's on the 1st of April. This looks like it's going to be really good. It's Gene Smart. It's got a whole bunch of awards under its belt already. To salvage her waning career, legendary Las Vegas comedian Deborah Vance is forced to team up with an entitled outcast television writer with this hilariously dark comedy series. As I say, it's got a huge bunch of awards already, that, so I think that's going to be one to look out for. But that's Hacks, and it's coming to Amazon Prime on the 1st of April. Slow Horses, which is a new Apple TV Plus series, that's coming on the 1st of April as well. It's based on a book. It's an espionage drama. It stars Gary Oldman in the lead role. Looks like it could be quite fun. So that's called Slow Horses, and that's Apple TV Plus on the 1st of April. And Wellington Paranormal is back for its fourth, and I think final season as well. That's Sky Comedy on the 5th of April at 9 p.m. for that. That's all the stuff that's coming over the next week. There's lots of good stuff to get your teeth into there. Mm-hmm. If they want to find more about you, where can they find you, Matt?
You can find my reviews and discussion podcasts and whatnot over on entertainmenttalk.org, and you can find us by searching for that name on your favorite podcast platform. I've done a lot of film reviews recently. Windfall, which is another Netflix film that I didn't even know about until it was on the platform. from. But I really enjoyed that. I reviewed Turning Red, which was really, really good as well. The Adam Project, which was really fun with Ryan Reynolds. I really enjoyed a lot of Ryan Reynolds films in the last year or so. So it was really good. Me and David are still doing Walking Dead. We're still doing a lot of gaming talk stuff. Did a couple of discussion podcasts recently about Call of Duty's future and past and stuff. And I also talked about Hogwarts Legacy, what's going on with that. But yeah, a whole bunch of things happening over there with the podcast, TV, games, films, and Man United podcast, basically. If you're wondering where the United cast has gone, it's because we haven't played for 2.5 weeks because we are not in the FA Cup because we got knocked out of it. So there's that. You can find me on Twitch as well if you want to, and eTalk UK. If you click on the schedule tab, which is on the profile, you can see when I'm going to go live. If you miss any of those or you want to see the COD clips and stuff, which I upload, there's a YouTube channel which is called Entertainment Talk Plays, but plenty of stuff to get listening to over all those platforms. So that's me.
So go and find Matt over on entertainmenttalk.org and all those other places. For other people involved in the show, you can find Bex at twitch.tv/TristaBytes. That's B-Y-T-E-S. For lots of streaming daily and retro gaming and just chatting streams and lots of other fun stuff over there. There's always fun to go and sit and watch Bex. So go and check her out on twitch.tv/TristaBytes. And for Daryl, you can go over to HollywoodNorthNews.net for lots of shows which are filmed and shot in Canada. And he's got a few interviews and stuff up there as well now. So go and check him out over there. For us, you can go to the website at geektown.co.uk throughout the week and see all the latest air date information. If you want to get in touch with your questions or comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at Geektown UK. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye bye.
Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.